C1S. Number 9B.
So again we have that nearly pleonasm, which says God is good, therefore evil unreal. You begin to feel her strict logic, which she always presents here, just to find that once we have taken a new standpoint of principle of God and not leaving it anymore, that really begins to solve any proposition of opposites. That mind cannot have an opposite, mortal mind. That good as mind cannot have any opposite as evil. So that the whole proposition of good and evil just goes out of our metaphysical thinking. And I feel this is really an important point to see, because in the beginning, naturally, we must show the student always how to distinguish, how to separate good from evil, separate the divine and the mortal, the immortal and the mortal, truth and error. But when thought grows and grows and touches the one being, then that goes out of consciousness. Then we can no more think in terms of distinguishing between good and evil, of distinguishing between mortal and immortal, because there is only the one. Therefore, mine is all and matter not. Mine is all, therefore good, therefore evil unreal. And so we begin to feel that in all things that happen, only mind, God, is happening. And she brings this out clearer and clearer as we go on. Then the next paragraph, we don't have, line 13, in following these leadings, you see she just shows in this chapter, as in no other chapter, the way she got to her conclusions. She gives us here the way how from an initial light, an influx of light, which was not yet definite in every detail, how from that first influx of a new idea, she proceeded and proceeded and proceeded until she could find the final answer. And it isn't her unique experience. If that what happened to her is a divine fact, then it must be a fact that applies to each one of us. It must have a universal law behind it. And therefore, it isn't just a matter of interest what happened to her. What she shows through her experience, a fundamental way of revelation. A way which we can inwardly follow, and that's the beautiful nature of it, just as Mrs. Eddy found in the Bible constantly the promise and the prophecy of what would come afterwards, and she would find strength in seeing that everything was prophesied about the coming of Christian Science, and would get strength there. In that same way, we can go back to the textbook and see how a new idea is born to Earth, and therefore how it is born to each one of us. So in following these leadings of scientific revelation, the Bible was my only textbook. That's a point I want to take up later on again, how far the Bible is a textbook and what that means. The scriptures were illumined. But the scriptures were illumined why? Because she says she followed the scientific revelation. Only by following the scientific revelation the scripture were illumined. And not the other way around. Reason and revelation were reconciled, and afterwards the truth of Christian Science was demonstrated. Again, revelation, reason, demonstration. But there is an order in it. Then she goes on and just shows, we don't want to read it, perhaps 22, but the signs and truths therein will forever remain to be discerned and demonstrated. Jesus demonstrated the power of Christian science to heal mortal mind and bodies, but this power was lost sight of and must again be spiritually discerned, taught, and demonstrated according to Christ's commands with signs following. Its signs must be apprehended by as many as believe on Christ and spiritually understand truth. You just hear over and over, I just want to point that out, that this thing, that this new idea that is born to us can only be spiritually discerned, so that we, and spiritually understood, that we put our stress not only on study, but on spiritual birth. Yes, then I leave out the next paragraph, and we'll go on to the next subtone, soul. What is now the next point? I tried to epitomize it by saying that mind, capitalized naturally, rules through divine metaphysics. How? Reversing perverted and physical hypotheses regarding deity. We come here to an interesting point. I read on line 6. Christian science is natural but not physical, because it takes it up with a spiritually natural nature of deity. The science of God and man is no more supernatural, it's nothing really transcendental, than it's the science of numbers, though departing from the realm of the physical as the science of God's spirit must. Some may deny its right to the name of science. Then, so it must be metaphysical, above the physical. The principle of divine metaphysics is God. That's the first time she uses the rendering divine metaphysics. And now she couples it with God. See, she lifts now the metaphysical out of the purely mental into the spiritually mental, or into the divine mind, and shows that metaphysics is right when it is embedded into God, into the divine mind. So that only that metaphysics, you see, is her high ideal of metaphysics, which is always deduced from the divine mind. Not just that metaphysics which goes out from matter and lifts it above matter into thought or into even ideas. That's not her great sense of metaphysics. Her sense of divine metaphysics is based on God. The principle of this metaphysics is God, the divine mind. Therefore, only that metaphysics, only that consciousness of ideas, which is constantly coming to us from our unity with the divine mind, from the manual of mind with us, is real metaphysics. All that metaphysics, which one knows so much, especially in America and so on, which is just trying to lift things out of the material into something that is of the nature of thought or of concepts, of qualities, is not scientific, because it starts from a wrong basis, from the material basis, and tries from the material basis to hint at a metaphysical truth. But her revelation was from God. So we always see that first of all we have to find our unity with God, and touching that oneness that begins to reveal itself to us through mind as its infinite idea, and that is the gives the categories of metaphysics. Then the practice of divine metaphysics is the utilization of the power of truth over error. Ordinary metaphysics is the utilization of thought over error. Here it is truth, not thought, not new concepts, not thinking, but truth. And truth has nothing to do with our thinking. Truth has to do with God. Its rules demonstrate its science. Again, she speaks about divine metaphysics, reverses perverted and physical hypotheses as to deity. Just as far as this, I think we have to see that clear, that divine metaphysics reverses. And it's the first time in the textbook where she brings in that reversion. And we know that the rule of reversion is a rule which the Christian Scientist uses very much, but mostly in the wrong way, without noticing it. And if we follow the way how she uses that term reverse in the textbook, we see something different than what the ordinary metaphysician understands under the rule of reversion. Here she begins to introduce that sense, and later on when we come to the main tone of soul, the old main tone of soul is showing the true sense of reversion. Here she introduces it and says, what does divine metaphysics really do? It first reverses perverted and physical hypotheses as to deity, not as to material objects or material situations or human situations. The first thing which we have to see clearly is that the concept of deity, which has been perverted, must be reversed. Perverted. See, we come now to three expressions in this subject, namely reversion, perversion, and inversion. And these three are very different in their use. Perverted means deviating from the right, true, correct. So, divine metaphysics does as its first rule of reversion, that it reverses a perverted concept of God. And later on we'll see that every true reversion will start with God and never with the testimony of the physical senses, and reverse that. That would be a complete wrong sense of reversion. Reversion is that we first have again a correct, true sense of God and his idea. That is the very first thing in the rule of healing, that we go back to God and look at the universe as God looks at it. And God doesn't know evil. That was going before, that God knows only good, and that in the equipollence of God there is the unreality of evil. And in that measure, at that moment, you begin to see at once that our whole application of science is by going out first from God and never from a situation. So that the rule of reversion here, as the very first one, is that we really are reversing our perverted sense of God, our limited sense of God, our finite sense of God, our unintelligent sense of God, and so on. And then the next paragraph is quite interesting. She says, a price of £100 offered in Oxford University, England, for the best essay on natural science, an essay calculated to offset the tendency of the age to attribute physical effects to physical causes rather than to a final spiritual cause, is one of the many incidents which show that Christian Science meets a yearning of the human race for spirituality. May I say the same paragraph in my words? She says, the yearning which humanity has and which Christian Science is meeting is showing that every physical effect is not the effect of a physical cause, but of a spiritual cause. Now, mostly at the beginning when we have students and introduce them into science, we say that every false effect is the effect of a false cause. That every physical effect is the effect of a false consciousness. But is it really? She says, is that the final cause? And she indicates that every physical effect is the effect of a spiritual cause. Now, how can we gather grapes from an apple tree? How is it possible that every physical effect is the effect of a spiritual cause? And here she points to it. And you know how very early she had already written that in the later part of 1866, I gained the scientific certainty that all causation was mind, capital M, and every effect a mental phenomenon. So either it is true that mind is all, which she has said in Miner's Mind, then that mind is good, as she has said in Minor Spirit, and therefore if that mind rules through metaphysics every effect, minor soul, then it is true that behind every manifestation, no matter if we call it material, if we call it evil, if we call it whatever we may call it, behind it is always one mind, because there is no final cause, no first cause, but the divine mind. And again, if we begin to see through this clearer, then that curse of struggling between good and evil leaves us, because we begin to sense, oh yes, there is only one mind, and that's the cause of everything. And that one mind rules through divine metaphysics. Naturally, what we seem to register as evil, or as disharmony, or as disease, is only truth urging upon error its resisted claim, but it's truth. And that resisted claim shows itself through its ignorance, through its as disease or as disharmony or whatever it is. But it is truth that urges upon error its resisted claim, so that it is really always the one mind that is at the helm of everything. Can you say that?
Yeah,
that
okay.
Is ruling everything, you see, that is steering every human action. No matter if we resist it or don't resist it, whenever we resist it, we say, the Lord has brought an evil. It's the anger of the Lord. Whenever we don't resist it, We accept it as the divine idea, which is love, working out the final fulfillment and manifestation of that idea. And that frees us. It's enormous freedom in which we come. If we can really, truly, in our innermost heart accept that all causation is mind, capital M, and that every effect, whatever it is, if it's harmonious or disharmonious for the human, is always the effect of the one mind. Where we go wrong is that we leave the standpoint of the divine principle. As long as we stick to the standpoint of the sixth chapter and stay there and stick to there, well, we only see the operation of the idea. The operation of idea urging upon me, upon the other. It's resist the claim. Truth does not tolerate error to be successful. Because we want error to be successful, ignorance to be successful, inability to be successful, inadequacies to be successful, because we want that, we resist that truth which says, I don't allow it. Only truth is working out its own idea. I think this concept is brought out very clearly, really, in two paragraphs, which I just give you the reference, and I don't want to read them, on 547 to 16, and 293, 24 to 28. There in those paragraphs is shown what is that anger of the Lord. But really, every effect is only the effect of a spiritual cause. See, we are teaching that only like produces like. Therefore, only a physical cause can bring forth a physical effect. But that was for the beginning. That was in our study, in our approach to the reality of being. But when we grow into the manhood and womanhood of science, we leave that behind. We grow into that standpoint of God, which has only one mind and only ruling as idea. And we are no more weighing a human situation in terms of good and evil. We are only weighing God in its infinite operation of idea and see that that is good. And because it is good in the tone of soul, it rules every effect. And that gives us a sense, really, that only good is going on.